Welcome to the Family Express podcast, where our destination is resilient and connected families. Come aboard with your hosts, marriage and family therapists, Catherine DeBruin and Rhonda Evans, to explore the world of emotionally focused family therapy, a model developed by Sue Johnson and colleagues. Together with our guest speakers, our travels will map the EFFT landscape, highlighting lessons learned, shared fears, and the passion and curiosity that bonds our community.
Welcome back to the next episode of the Family Express podcast with Catherine and Rhonda. We are so excited for our speaker today, Dr. Laura Castro. Dr. Laura will tell us about her education and her research and her practice and her niche population. And we're just so grateful that you're here with us, Laura. Thank you so much. Laura is a licensed marriage and family therapist, and we are just so happy to have you here. Hi, Laura.
Hi, thank you so much for inviting me. I'm so excited to be here and talk about a topic that I'm so incredibly passionate about. So thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Well, we have so much to learn from you, Laura. We've been excited for this meeting. Tell us a little bit about who you are, what kind of clients you're drawn to working with, why.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so I'm a gender affirmative therapist, and I help queer adolescents, adults, and their families overcome trauma, complex PTSD, and other relational challenges so that they can heal and build supportive and healthy relationships and also live authentically. So that's kind of like my goal in life. That's my purpose, like why I'm here. And I kind of got here from like there was a detour, right? So, and as I was doing my studies, I had been really focused on the relationships of trans folks, because there's not really a lot of research on that. And then my own child came out as trans, and you know, it was like, hit the brakes. I'll stop. Like, okay, what is this? Let me like get my head wrapped around this. And you know, the relationship stuff took a backseat. I really needed to learn information for me, and so that I could be the best support and advocate for my child as I could be. So that's kind of who I am, and how I, like, super short snippet of how I got here.
Oh, thank you for sharing that, Laura. That is really remarkable how you find yourself drawn to this population professionally, and then you actually walk through this journey in your own family as well.
Yeah.
We seem to hear the story so often with folks, and I know that matches, you know, my journey as well. Like, we're drawn to the work that we do for a reason, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
And so you said you also ended up doing research with families that have queer adolescents and adult families. Tell us a little bit about your research and what you discovered.
Yeah. So I think it's important to understand kind of what the landscape looks like. You know, I've always been an advocate and an ally for the trans community. And I know what a lot of the research says. And as a parent, that was terrifying, right? Because we know that the mental health and the suicide rate of queer youth is really high. And just if we're looking at the most recent survey of LGBTQ plus young people in the U.S., it was the 2024 study by Trevor Project, which they do such a great job with keeping updated research. Over half of trans and non-binary young people have seriously considered attempting suicide within the past year. And then also, if we look at like bullying and violence and other forms of victimization, like the research, it does not paint a pretty picture. And as as a parent, I was so scared for my child. And then it became like, okay, well, what can I do about this? What can I do? How can I kind of inoculate my kiddos so that they don't become a statistic? And I think that it's really important to understand, like, that there's so much riding on us as parents and as therapists to get it right. And so actually I did my doctoral dissertation on the affirming and non-affirming experiences that trans and non-binary adolescents were having in family therapy. And getting things through the IRB, through the review board, to get approved can be kind of tricky, right? Especially if we're dealing with kids. And so I the way that I worked through that was interviewing adults about their memories as trans and non-binary adolescents who had been in family therapy. So I was originally interested in looking for ways to tailor EFFT to families with trans adolescents, but I couldn't find any research that was specifically about the kinds of experiences that these adolescents were having in family therapy. So then I kind of had to switch gears and do a little bit of foundational work so that I could figure out what kind of experiences that they were having. So.
Sure, Laura, that's amazing, the work that you've done and wanting to contribute to the field in this way. And also just incredibly scary and painful to know what these children's, these adolescents' experiences are out in the world. And so I just want to start by saying thank you so much for caring about this population and for the work that you've done to contribute to the knowledge base.
It's really important. Thank you. I'm really excited.
Yeah. Okay, so tell us what you have found. And again, like, you haven't just contributed to the general knowledge base, like, you specifically are looking to help us as family therapists to know what are we doing that's helping and what are we doing that's really harming. Yeah. So we need this information.
Sure. So really what I was looking at was the affirming and the non-affirming experiences. And there were a couple other things that didn't quite fit so neatly into those categories. I think the first thing, and we know that, like, we're not going to have great outcomes in family therapy with adolescents if they don't want to be there, right? And so, like, having their buy-in is so incredibly important. And in my participants, most of them didn't feel like they had a choice. And, you know, they saw it as it was like forced or some kind of punishment, and that their parents were like trying to quote unquote fix them, right? Like, let me take you to therapy so that therapist can fix you. And, you know, when we do that, it really presents them with this lack of autonomy that will undermine the whole therapy process, right? We have to get that buy-in. So they felt like all kinds of different ways about it, but that's basically the overall, like, about family therapy overall, what I found. And then if we were looking at the affirming experiences that they had with their parents, they considered really parental support, and what that looked like might be the parents finding a knowledgeable and affirming therapist, consistently going and being engaged in family therapy. The very most important thing that was reiterated over and over and over and over again was respecting their gender identities by using their chosen name, their correct name and pronouns. And this really helped increase their self-esteem and self-confidence, and also made them feel more securely bonded with their families.
Okay, let me just slow down to make sure I'm getting this. So on the non-affirming side with the parents, those are the families who are coming in and kind of sending the teen to therapy maybe on their own, or there's a sense that there's something wrong with the teen and they're in therapy to get that fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously if the family therapist sees this dynamic, like starting out, the very first thing is to try to correct that understanding and pull everybody into family treatment and get the teenagers buy-in. By, like, how do you do that?
Yeah, sure. So I'm gonna talk about it a little bit more and when I talk about therapists specifically, but like psychology as a field has done a lot of harm to the queer community. And so oftentimes there is automatically that distrust there. And so people are often skeptical, like, why? Like, why are you trying to work with trans people? Right. And so if having that self-disclosure is really important when working with queer folks, like, This is who I am. This is how I show up in the world, my social location. And this is why I choose to work with the queer community. And if we have like a personal tie in there, then that's also super helpful. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. Yeah.
Okay. Can I ask kind of a silly question?
Yeah.
For the teenagers coming in, how do they already have a negative stigma about therapy with the history that you're saying, which definitely therapy has not been very helpful?
Mm-hmm.
But being such a young person, are they already aware of that?
Yes, 100%.
Yeah.
And because look, there are already oftentimes so many adults in their life who are not affirming and who they don't trust, right? And then their parents are dragging them into therapy to a therapist who they've chosen. And so inherently, that therapist is automatically like going to be on the side of the parents, right? And so we need to work to like counteract that kind of automatic thought.
That makes a lot of sense. Thanks for explaining that. That it could come kind of from the adult or parental systems mm-hmm. that they've already been exposed to. And right. So I imagine what you're saying is also getting the teenagers buy in on which therapist the family's going to go see could be important too, right? Even before.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And adolescents, they want to be included.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
They want to, like, if I'm going to have a stake in this, I want to be part of the decision-making process. And then, you know, that's a way of helping to, we'll include them and empower them and get their buy-in.
And teenagers are old enough, I would imagine, that we want to be training them on how to make these decisions in life in general anyway, right?
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah.
Laura, as you say that about getting their buy-in, and that starts with empowering them to be part of that decision-making process of choosing a therapist, I just began wondering in my head of like, does it even go as far as it helps to create safety?
Yeah. Oh my God. Yes. So safety is like the number one most important thing. And I didn't ask any questions specifically about safety in my interviews, but every single participant repeated the importance of safety over and over and over again. So that is number one. The most important thing is creating that safety. And, you know, like as EFT therapists, we already, like that's already like the goal is to create that safety, right?
Yeah, I just think about how any kid who is identifying as queer or trans is very well versed, I imagine, in that scanning for safe versus non-safe.
Sure.
And they become very attuned to that, maybe at an even younger age than other kids. I don't know if there's research about that, but just so tuned into who is safe, who is not safe. Is family therapy safe? Is it not safe? And it just makes me think about how we can help how the families, right, when they're choosing which therapist to work with, creating safety can go all the way back to that beginning part of the process.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And unfortunately, like, oftentimes that doesn't happen. And then, you know, that what is happening in home, at home, is also happening in the therapy room. And so we have parents showing up who are intentionally and repeatedly like misgendering their children. They're using the wrong names or the wrong pronouns. And that really undermines their child's identity and their sense of safety. And you know, that was one of the findings in my research, which supported like current research. But we just didn't have that like from the adolescent's perspective. You know, and other non-affirming experiences with parents that I found were like just a general lack of parental support. And so there were a lot of instances where parents were dismissive or critical or actually hostile toward their child's identity, right? And so there weren't really a lot of in between. Parents generally were either really supportive or unwilling to even try to understand or support their child's gender identity, which, you know, leads to feelings of isolation and invalidation. And again, like not feeling safe.
I think that's interesting, Laura, that you use the word, the spectrum was on the extreme ends of unsupportive to unwilling. It wasn't like unsupportive and unwilling. I hear somewhat of like a differentiation in there, not just supportive and unsupportive. I hear like unsupportive and unwilling just kind of sounds like two different things, but obviously I think it's kind of similar, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. So you have like the parents who are really supportive. They take the time and they are trying to find a therapist who maybe specializes in working with trans people, to I'm going to find someone who is basically just going to parrot whatever I'm already saying.
Right.
Yeah. Ugh. I know. It's yuck.
Ugh. Yeah.
Which is kind of where we as therapists can step in, right? And help start creating maybe a little bit of tolerance and understanding. And, you know, I found that there were a few therapists who did a pretty good job at that. They were effectively using the clinical skills that they had to establish trust and rapport, and that helped to kind of create a safer environment. There were a few who seemed to be pretty knowledgeable, at least from the my interview subject's perspective, and they seemed to understand the kinds of issues that trans people were experiencing, and that understanding helped them feel more safe, and it also helped them build a stronger rapport. And one of the other things that was really helpful was taking a supportive stance toward the child's gender identity. And if they didn't know, they were open and demonstrated their willingness to learn about their child's experiences. And I had one participant who even talked about that their therapist was like, well, you know what? I don't know, but I'm going to go and do my own research about that. And they did. And that was just really, important to that participant.
Sure. I think I want to get into the nitty gritty of it, but I'm not sure, Laura, where you're at and kind of what information you want to make sure that we know. But I have questions of like, where do therapists get stuck? And
Yeah. Okay. So let me share the ugly and the embarrassing, right? And like this, it just hurt my whole heart that there are therapists who are really causing a lot of harm. They either lack the clinical skills that are necessary to handle the difficulties or the complexities of working with queer youth and maybe unsupportive parents. There's a lack of knowledge in general. Most most grad school training programs for therapists don't specifically cover trans issues, working with trans clients. And there are several studies on that that support that finding as well. And so when we don't know about something, it's hard to know, like, what kind of questions should I ask? What kind of interventions might be helpful or not helpful, right? Like, how can I be most effective in a situation that maybe I just really need to educate myself about? And so it becomes, it falls back on us to do the work. I also found that there were therapists who were displaying bias or a reluctance to fully support the adolescent's gender identity. And like the worst instances, and unfortunately there were multiple participants who reported this, where like the therapist and the unsupportive parents would like gang up and like be basically attacking that trans adolescent. And like that part, like that just hurts my whole heart, right? Like what are we even doing? Yeah. So that's the ugly right there.
I just want to reflect that as you're talking about being a therapist who can be affirming, like I'm noticing myself get kind of quiet and feeling a bit overwhelmed and thinking, I want to be able to do this. And then I wonder, like, do I have enough knowledge and experience? Mm-hmm. And so there's that bit, but also like what you're talking about with this ugly is it's not even like just a lack of knowledge or what we're not doing. You're talking mm-hmm. about what therapists seem to be kind of actively doing.
Yeah.
Maybe in an intentional way or by their lack of knowledge, right?
Maybe both. So they like just flat out rejected the adolescent's identity, or they didn't want to talk about it, or they like tried to ignore it altogether. Or else they focused too much on it in like times that maybe weren't really relevant.
Mm-hmm.
And then acting in ways that the adolescents felt reinforced the kind of criticism and misgendering that the parents were doing.
Right.
Like mm-hmm. it's like the therapist became like another parent in the room who was just parroting what the kiddo would already hearing.
And I'm imagining like if you've got the family in the room and you've probably sometimes there's two parents, like mm-hmm. already with teenagers, it's out of balance because there's one of them and there's often more than one parent, right?
Yeah.
But now you've got the therapist kind of siding or ganging up with the parent.
Right. Right. Who isn't the person of power in the room, right?
Ooh. That's remarkable that these teens even show up at all.
Yeah, which kind of goes back to the beginning of getting their buy-in.
Why would they want to, right?
Yes, meeting one-on-one with them. This is why I'm here. This is what this is going to look like, right? And just explain that, at some point it may be necessary to like have that individual meeting or meetings with the kiddo. And if they have like a super unsupportive caregiving unit, just explain like, hey, like this is where your parents are. And this is kind of the way that I need to approach this. Right. And I want you to know that like, I'm not jumping on their team. Right. Like the family, I'm team family. And, you know, I need to get you to a place where everyone kind of can have some similar, what's the word I'm looking for? To come to some sort of common place, right? Or at least turn down the temperature in the room enough so that the parents can hear And so if I'm just like with pom-poms and stuff on your side, being your cheerleader, like I'm going to lose the parents. And like teenagers are smart and they understand, and that like they want their parent support. And I think that if we can explain that to them, they can understand that. And they're probably going to trust you more. And then again, there's that safety and their buy-in.
Yeah, Laura, it kind of sounds like what you're talking about is the family therapist being open or more like transparent with this teen about what they can expect from you, how you're going to approach this, and kind of laying it all out on the table in some kind of general ways, maybe not all the details,
but sure.
In that individual session. And just as setting the tone of like, I'm team family. And so this is how I'm going to have to approach that. It sounds like you're talking about being explicit and transparent with that teen.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a fan of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, if we're working with somebody with trauma, you got to let them know what to expect. And that predictability is so important in establishing safety.
For sure. Yeah. And I know what my questions are. I'm just wondering if Catherine has.
Yeah, I can talk about this forever. So.
Okay, so I really wanted to hear from you about a couple things, like what do family therapists, not just an individual therapist, what does a family therapist really need to know about working with trans teens? And that might depend on where that teen might be in the coming out process. I don't know if that kind of differs of what you might tell us about, but then also common places where an affirming family therapist might have missteps or get stuck. Those are my questions.
Sure. So I'm going to go back to my own story.
Okay.
Like as a parent who is incredibly supportive and affirming, it was hard for me to wrap my head around because I had to go through my own grieving process, right? And it wasn't that I was losing a child. It was that, you know, from the time that we find out that we're pregnant, we start like building this future life for our kiddos in our head. And I had to realize like, those are my dreams. Those are the things that I want for my child, and then like being able to let go of that. And that was my own work that I had to do. And I think that that is something that's really important for therapists to understand, because, you know, there may be a grief process that needs to happen, even with really supportive parents. And it's not about the kids or they don't love them or accept them. It's just like, we're people and we have our own future that we've envisioned. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that is something that is really important to keep in mind. And if I hadn't been through my own family experience with this, I don't know that I would have gotten that anywhere else. So I think that, I mean, that's definitely not been in any of the training that I've had. That was, I guess, trial by fire.
Yeah, because earlier when you said, you know, the graduate programs don't do courses or training specifically working with trans folks. Mm-hmm. And you said issues specific to trans folks. In my brain, I was like, yeah, what are those issues? Let me start filling in my gaps of knowledge, right?
Yeah.
It makes me wonder if what you're talking about, the grief and loss on the parent side, is one of the issues that can come up when a family is experiencing a teen coming out or as trans. So it's like the grief and the loss is something that family therapist would need to assess for and look for and see if it's there.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. I mean, I think that's something that maybe doesn't like pop to the forefront of our mind. Mm-hmm. Right. But the kiddo is going through this huge process and they're figuring out themselves and life, you know, like all adolescents do. Like, it's this huge time of just really amazing change. And like, it's stressful for parents without trans youth. Right? And then you throw all of these other additional layers, especially like we're in a really politically hostile climate right now. And like, I don't want to get into politics because everyone has their own opinion about that. So what I will say is that the way that things are right now are really damaging for trans youth. And there's a lot of people who are really scared.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
thank you, Laura, for speaking to the parent side and the need for readjusting how they thought things were going to be and that need to grieve and the loss. And I think that makes a lot of sense. And as we work hard to get parental buy-in in order to be able to support the teen, we can't overlook that piece. That's got to be so important to make sure that the parents have space to be able to do their own work.
Yeah, right. And if we're doing EFFT, we're already doing that and working on shoring up the parents, right?
Yeah.
So we're already going to be meeting with them. And so that will, we have this possibility already baked in to EFFT, right?
Yeah.
So here's something maybe to consider when we're doing that work.
Because with EFFT, actually the big change that happens in stage one is getting the parents accessible and engaged, seeing the child clearly, understanding the child developmentally so that they can caregive and be there to support and grow. And so really looking after the parents. Mm-hmm. And also I imagine getting the parents caught up and teaching and educating is probably some of what we're going to be doing with them as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, like there's not any one necessarily like blanket thing except for like pronouns and names. Super, super important. Love your child unconditionally. Super, super important. Right. Mm-hmm. But just as any other child or human, we have all of these different developmental stages that we go through. Right. And so what we're experiencing with someone who's maybe in kindergarten or first grade is going to be very different than like someone who is, I don't know, getting ready to go through puberty, or someone who is, I don't know, getting ready to graduate high school. And that's all going to look really different. And there are different resources tailored to different age groups.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. And I really like what you're saying about focusing on the parents in stage one, because then that leaves the teenager, takes a bit of pressure or the focus off the teen, which is what you were saying originally.
Yeah.
They might already be so scared about how they're going to get focused on more in treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So once we get everyone's buy-in to do it this way, mm-hmm. That can be helpful to the whole system.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Okay. So Laura, what do we need to know? You know, what are your tips and tricks for us?
Yeah, get training.
Let's start there.
Like actively seeking out knowledge it's really important. And I think one of the things that can be easy to get wrapped up in is or discouraged by are the statistics, right? If we're looking at statistics, they look pretty abysmal. And also, we know that family support and family acceptance, like that is the number one most important thing that we can do. That is the most protective factor, is having that support. And there are areas of support that are the level of inoculation, right? So if we have we know that if all of the family members are using that child's chosen name and correct pronouns, the level of suicidality, anxiety, depression, all of those symptoms decreases. It's significantly lower than households where no family members use their names or their pronouns. So like that part is really important. And then also having like school support would be like another realm, right? And then like looking as we kind of branch out from the home, what other areas can we touch to create as supportive and understanding and accepting surrounding for our kiddo as we can.
Beautiful. So on our side, we need to get training. We need to get the information. And I can tell you where I get stuck on that, and we'll get to that in a second.
Sure.
And then our goal, I think what you're saying, our treatment goal is getting the parent buy-in and growing an alliance with that parent, unit, and ultimately working on that protective factor of parental support.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. And I think it would get really tricky when if the family therapist discovers parental support is blocked.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that's a whole other episode.
Right, for sure.
I'm sure that would take a whole episode to return to.
Oh, I think it would probably take more than that. But
Okay.
Well, yeah, can you call Laura for a consultation session?
Absolutely.
Yeah, of course.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I can tell you where I get stuck, and I really want to get it right, is I get confused about how to frame the experience of a kiddo who is trans. And the language I use, I'm afraid, is the wrong frame in my head or even the wrong words out loud. I struggle with, like, is this kid growing their identity development? Are they figuring out who they are?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or is it like, no, they know who they are, and the work is letting other people in on that? Like these two options, maybe it's a third option that I'm not naming, but I get kind of confused on, like, is there internally, are they like they're figuring out that they're trans, or they know they're trans, and then the process that they're talking about, that they're going through, is letting other people in on that? Or is it both? Or is it a fourth option? Mm-hmm. Like, you can see how I get confused.
Yes. It's all of those things, okay. Right? There's like not one size fits all. Some children know from a very, very young age that like this is just, well, I mean, they all know from a young age, like kind of this is how I fit into the world. And sometimes it takes kids a little bit longer to figure some stuff out, or maybe they're just exploring who they are. So when my kiddo came out to me several years ago as trans, cool, I'm on board. We're using the name that you've chosen. We're using he, him pronouns. Great. And then, I don't know, maybe a year later, my kiddo came to me and was like, well, you know, I don't know that's right. I think I fit, maybe I feel a little bit more non-binary. Like, I think that kind of fits me better right now. Okay, cool. Like, or what name are you still want to use that name? And they're like, no, I'm going to go back to my other name. Okay, great. What pronouns do you want me to use? How about they or them? Great. Awesome. I'm on board. And then, you know, a little bit later down the road, they decided, actually, you know, I still am feeling non-binary-ish, right? But I think I'm going to start using like she and they pronouns. And so it's, adolescence is just an amazing time. And really what kids need to know is, I love you unconditionally. And I accept you for who you are, not who I want you to be. I love you who you are in this moment at this time, no matter what.
You make it sound simple.
I mean, Logically, yeah, it's really simple. And like, humans are messy and we have all of this other social programming, right? And so even though we might really, really want to be on board and might support our children, like, we're probably still going to get it wrong. I mean, no matter our child's identity, I get it wrong probably, I don't know, about a million times a day, but I know that my kids know that I love them and mm-hmm. I support them unconditionally. So, and that's really the important part.
Mm. That's a beautiful goal line to give us as we're doing this work and journeying with our kids. And I think I'm hearing you say, like, listen really carefully mm-hmm. and follow their lead. Yeah. And through their journey of adolescence, they're going to try on many things and things are going to change. And they're still figuring out things. And so they might know, they might not know. Like you were saying, Rhonda, we don't quite know where we're going to come in and join this journey as therapists, but listen and follow and then be ready for rupture and repair, because we are going to mess up. But ultimately, the goal line is to come to a place of unconditional love. And there's going to be things that come up in us, our own grief, our own loss, our own confusion, our own overwhelm, our own insecurity, and manage that as parents, as the self of therapist, pay attention to that, walk with that in ourselves so that we can come back again and just support their journey of growing.
Yeah. And just remember that it's going to look different for everybody, right? Sometimes there might be flux. Sometimes things are just, this is just the way it is. And it just stays that way. So, like, not having any expectations on what the outcome might look like.
Okay.
Exactly. I think I go back to that. I've changed the phrase myself. It's like, training and verify, and I'm working on that phrase. I don't quite love it, but I'm going to get the training and then I'm going to go back into this particular client and I'm going to check what's your experience. But I do want to have the training and the knowledge base, and I want to go back in with that particular client and say, now you tell me how it is for you so that I know. So I'm working on that word, training and verify. I gotta fix that phrase.
Yeah.
Training and something.
Yeah.
Well, Laura, so as we wrap up here, I mean, I really like this kind of ending place you're talking about parents and therapists loving their kid and their client unconditionally, and that support for who you are in this moment at this time. And then also, of course, the wisdom of the therapist getting training, the family therapist getting training. And so for anyone out there who hasn't done the EFFT training classes, I encourage you to do so. I'll just make a plug for that. Laura, is there anything else you would like to end with today? Any words of wisdom or anything like that?
I would like to maybe give out some resources. So for parents, PFLAG is an amazing organization, and there you will find support, and there are chapters all over the country. If you are looking for information, the Trevor Project has just a ton of resources, and also Gender Spectrum. Those are both really great resources for therapists. The World Professional Association for Transgender Health, WPATH. Mm-hmm. There's like a standard of care. The most recent version just came out recently. And there's a section in there specifically for mental health folks.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you.
And also like the National LGBTQIA Plus Health Education Center. There's so many different resources, so many organizations that are just doing tremendous work. Sometimes we just have to sort through. And so like my default is usually PFLAG. because they typically do a pretty good job of staying up to date on especially local resources for parents.
Okay, great. Thank you for that tip. Appreciate that.
Thank you so much, Laura, for your time and for sharing the knowledge, for doing the research, but also just for sharing your heart and your personal family experience. We wish you the very best.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Thank you, Laura.
That's it for today, folks. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you again for our next journey.